Hi, hello, everybody. Welcome to our program tonight. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Sarah Sally. I'm chair of the Waldo County Democratic Committee. We're hosting this program for our members and for the whole community because we know that tribal sovereignty is an issue that is important for everyone in Maine to understand and appreciate. It is bound up with fundamental issues of fairness and equity that our values we share as Democrats and as Mainers. Before I introduce our guest, just a few Zoom housekeeping matters. I'm sure most of you are familiar with Zoom functions, but I'd just like to point out that you are all muted right now, and I'd ask you to stay muted during the program. We will have question and answers later, but for the program, for the time being, please stay muted. When it does come time for questions, we're going to start with questions that were submitted through the Zoom registration page. And then because we want to make sure we use our time efficiently, we'll be taking questions submitted through the chat function. So if you can please put questions there, we'll moderate them at the when the time comes. That works for people joining by video. If we have anyone joining by phone, we will take time to give them an opportunity to ask questions too. And for those of you, well, I don't see anyone on the phone right now, but hopefully you'll be aware that *9 will let you raise your hand on the phone. And of course, the raise hand function is available on your video Zoom screen. I also wanted to let you know that we are recording today. So if you have any concerns about that, please feel free to turn your video off. All right, now on to the program. We are so grateful and excited today that Ambassador Molly Undana is with us. She is the Penobscot Nation Ambassador, as well as the President of the Board of the Directors of the Wabanaki Alliance. The Alliance was formed last year to educate Maine people about the need for tribal sovereignty. It's comprised of the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaq, Houlton Band of Maliseet, the Passamaquoddy tribe, and the Penobscot Nation. The legislation we've asked Ambassador Dana to speak about is some of the most important legislation before the Maine legislature this season, which means that Ambassador Dana, you are probably one of the busiest people in Maine right now. So that makes us extra grateful that you've taken the time today to be with us. So thank you and welcome. And please go ahead with your presentation.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, I feel like I could talk about this bill in my sleep. There's been a lot of conversations about it lately, which is great. It's a really awesome problem to have. So I guess to give a very broad view of why I am the person talking about this right now, we should talk about the ambassador role, why this role exists, why we don't have the representative in the legislature anymore. And that kind of sets the stage for talking about this next batch of legislation, I think. So if we go way, way back to 1980, in the decade before that, there had been a few court cases having, you know, to do with these struggles over sovereignty in the state of Maine and what kind of powers the tribes had, what kind of jurisdiction the state had, and then this is my dog, Olive, and she likes to say hi. And then, of course, there was the lawsuit that led to the 1980 Land Claim Settlement Act. And that was essentially the Passamaquoddy tribe and later the Penobscot Nation and later the Houlton Band of Maliseet discovered that around 2/3 of the state of Maine had been illegally taken from the tribes because the treaties with Massachusetts and Maine were never ratified by the federal government via the Non-Intercourse Act. So there was this huge kind of unsettled period where the tribes and the state and the United States were all trying to negotiate what a settlement would look like, and basically trying to set the stage for how the tribes and the state and the federal government would interact going forward forever. And, you know, thinking, I was born in 1984, I wasn't quite alive in 1980, but from what I've heard, there was kind of two camps of tribal people. There were people that could foresee that this might be a problem when it comes to sovereignty, that by signing on to this agreement, there was language in there that could possibly lead to the state treating the tribal nations like municipalities. There was another camp of people that was thinking, we're living in extreme poverty caused by generations of trying to heal from colonization and attempted genocide, having this theft of land and resources. So thinking about a settlement with the federal government was attractive to them because there was sums of money, there was an opportunity to get a land base. So it was kind of like they didn't know when they would have this opportunity again. So let's sign this thing, basically. And at the 11th hour, there was language added to this act, section 1735B of the 1980 act. And that essentially prohibits tribes in Maine from having access to any federal legislation that might benefit the tribes. And since the 1980 Act, there's been 151 pieces of legislation that the tribes haven't had access to because of that act. So that has been restrictive for us in many ways. And I'll get into kind of specific examples around that later. So this agreement, this settlement, did cause a lot of tension with tribal state relations. The tribal nations basically maintained that we have never signed away our federal recognition or status by signing this agreement. We never agreed to be less sovereign. We don't see sovereignty as something given or taken by the state of Maine. It's something that we already have, and that should be acknowledged and recognized. That's where we've always held firm. Now, you've probably heard about litigation and court cases around the rights to the river. That's probably the most visible. We've also had areas of tension around a lot of other things, but it all goes back to how both parties are interpreting the Settlement Act and essentially how the state of Maine has really used this act to undermine tribal sovereignty. In 2015, after many, many years of having a representative in the legislature, things had reached kind of a boiling point when it came to tribal state relations. The Penobscot Nation had an ongoing court case over Penobscot River and ancestral territory. And then Governor LePage had rescinded a tribal consultation order. And essentially that was sort of the last straw, I think, for the Penobscot Nation and the Passamaquoddy tribe. And it was voted on at our general meeting to remove the representative. And I was there at that meeting, and I remember hearing a lot of great arguments for, on both sides of the issue. This isn't equitable, we're not respected, we keep showing up to this table and we keep getting turned away. And, a reference I like to say for the table metaphor is, we might sit at the table, but we're always ordering off a different menu, I think was how we were feeling. You had other people saying, so many of our representatives have done such a good job, this would be disrespectful to do away with this position. It might be detrimental in the future if we don't have somebody in the chamber. And essentially, when the vote came around, it was unanimous to pull the representative. So even people that felt strongly about keeping it came to see, that this might be the right move. And it was a magical moment, really, for the tribe to be that united around something. I was in the voting body that day, not even thinking in a million years that I might step into that role in a few years. I was working in human resources, I was raising small children, and about a year after that, I was elected to tribal council. And they had developed this ambassador position to kind of fill that role and then think about like beyond, you know. So I ended up applying. I was appointed in 2017. I resigned from tribal council so that I could take on this role. And I kind of hit the ground running. It's such an honor being the first person appointed to do this, but there's also a lot of pressure because I'm deciding what this looks like, where I'm spending my time, you know, how much of it is state, how much of it is federal. And I'm really lucky to have the guidance of the chief and council to let me know where things are more important. And I know I'm a little bit biased, but I feel like the ambassador position kind of walks the talk of being a sovereign. It gives the impression when I'm in the state house or now when I'm on Zooms with lawmakers that this truly is a government to government relationship. And that while I may not be sitting in the chamber or having a vote, there's definitely a lot of respect, I think, that comes to an office of ambassador for a tribal nation. On the flip side, the Passamaquoddy tribe have reset their representative, and that's Representative Rena Newell, and she's doing some fabulous work this session, and we're working in collaboration on a lot of things. So I'm also seeing that position being used in a really great way. So that's kind of our journey into right now in government representation terms since the Settlement Act. The legislation we are looking at this session is the latest attempt to amend the Land Claims Settlement Act. And this was something that has been done numerous times, but always sort of falls short of the finish line. Suffolk University Law School has studied the Settlement Act and come up with a series of recommendations that haven't been adopted. Maine Indian Tribal State Commission has done the same thing. And that was actually a body set up for dispute resolution through the 1980 Settlement Act. And I guess this time around, there were opportunities and a lot of people were thinking, well, what makes this time different? You know, why are we still kind of trying this over and over again? And coming into the 129th legislature, we had done a lot of work in the governor's race to kind of raise the profile of tribal issues. And a lot of that was based on a lot of work tribal people are doing, but I also saw so many allies throughout the state. Every single forum for the governor's candidates, even if tribal people weren't there, there was a question in the audience about tribal sovereignty. And I saw this kind of trend happening. And I, you know, asked Chief Francis, I said, what if we hosted a forum for the candidates? And he said, you're crazy. But I said, no, you know, hear me out. And thankfully he was very gracious and let me kind of, you know, explore this a little bit. And we ended up hosting a forum for these candidates on Indian Island. And we invited current Governor Janet Mills. And she accepted our invitation, which was kind of a big deal. She had been the Attorney General during a lot of our court cases or the main court case about the river. So having her come to Indian Island to answer questions from the crowd, and I felt like that was the beginning of what could be some nice healing around this relationship. But we've never wanted healing without accountability. So in all my meetings with the governor, you know, we talk about sovereignty, and I'm always really upfront about this is what it means to us. We want you to understand where we're coming from. And going into the legislative session, I had a couple of bills that I knew I wanted to get done. And that was the ban on Indian mascots in schools and changing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. And thankfully those passed with a Democratic majority in the House and Senate, and the governor signed both of those bills into law. And a lot of those discussions that came about working those two bills, I think really set the stage about equity and about talking about race and history and trauma and what we're going to recognize and celebrate and stereotypes and representation. So I saw a lot of really cool things happening. And around the same time, lawmakers were putting in bills to amend the Settlement Act. And we were kind of, you know, some of them put in bills saying we should just repeal the whole thing and replace it. Some other ones had very specific changes to things. So we had a meeting with the current president of the Senate, Troy Jackson, and former Speaker of the House, Sarah Gideon, and all of the tribal chiefs, and myself and Representative Raina Newell. And the product of that meeting was this idea that we should convene a task force of lawmakers and tribal leaders to look at the 1980 land claims, talk about the changes that should be made, and that's exactly what happened. And there were the former chairs of judiciary, Senator Mike Carpenter and Representative Donna Bailey, who's now Senator Bailey. They were also the chairs of the task force. All of the chiefs either sat on the task force or sent their designee, and there were non-voting members from the Attorney General's office and the governor's office. And it was, I think, seven or eight meetings. And a lot of it was the legal team from the tribes educating the lawmakers on federal Indian law. The Settlement Act had been the law of the land for so long, and really the basis for like everything having to do with tribal law in Maine and how the tribe should be governed, that it was really hard to impress upon people, this is how all of the other tribes in the country are operating under federal Indian law. And really, we are also, we should be under those laws as well. You know, we've been really oppressed by this Settlement Act, and we haven't been given opportunities to amend it as we were told in 1980. You know, that's another thing, thinking back to when tribal people were thinking about accepting this in 1980, they were told, if this isn't working, if we need to come back and fix it or amend things, that will always be an option. And that hasn't ever really been an option. We're hoping it's an option now. So the task force produced 22 recommendations, and they were voted on almost unanimously. I say almost because a lot of the recommendations were unanimously passed, but there was one voting member who wasn't present for the vote, and we think it would have likely been a no. So mostly unanimously. And these recommendations cover all of the areas in the Settlement Act that are unclear or that are overly restrictive with state jurisdiction over tribes. And we can get into them a little bit in detail, but they're basically trust land, land use and natural resources, fish and game, taxation, criminal and civil jurisdiction, and then federal law provisions. And federal law provisions, what I talked about with the federal acts not being able to be adopted by Maine tribes currently. There is, I should have mentioned, in those federal acts, there is language in the land claims that states if someone in Congress adds Maine tribes specifically to these acts, then they can be applied in Maine, but that's a pretty heavy lift, and that hasn't quite happened. Actually, in the latest House version of the Violence Against Women Act at the federal level, Representative Shelley Pingree has added the Maine tribes on it. So that's exciting. And you know, maybe if we can't get this fixed right away, that can set a good precedent for the future. So we got together this large bill. We worked it through a couple of public hearings last session, and then the pandemic hit. And I think a lot of things were stalled for a lot of people. And that was certainly pretty sad for us that we had finally gotten this very large body of work into a place where we hoped it would be successful. And we were, you know, kind of dead in the water. But we were able to have two Zoom work sessions with the Judiciary Committee, and it was actually voted out of committee. So had there been a special session, we would have been able to possibly bring this back. But as we all know now, there wasn't. So this time around in the 130th legislature where we are now, we still have this large omnibus bill. And that is most of the recommendations from that task force. There are two big changes. And one is, one of the recommendations was having Violence Against Women Act, the federal law cover the tribes in Maine with tribal courts, which is Penobscot and Passamaquoddy. We were able to do that through a separate bill last session that was passed into law. So we've taken care of VAWA through a bill sponsored by Representative Rachel Talbot Ross. The other large change this time around, we took gaming out completely because we find gaming to kind of be its own thing. And, you know, strategically, it's hard to tell where people are going to fall on that, especially along party lines. So we wanted gaming to, you know, go through the Veteran Legal Affairs Committee instead of the Judiciary Committee and kind of be talked about it as a separate issue. And we actually had that public hearing yesterday. And the gaming bill is essentially extending tribal gaming to tribes in Maine regulated by the Federal Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, which talks about, you know, making compacts with the state and talking with surrounding towns, municipalities. Gaming operations can only be on reservation or trust land. So the IGRA, as it's called, sets up some parameters regulating gaming. And if this law should, if this bill should pass, that will be applicable to Maine tribes. The large omnibus bill is the remainder of those recommendations. So the other items that I went through, and that is sponsored, the gaming bill is sponsored by Representative Ben Collings from Portland, and that's LD 554. The large omnibus bill is sponsored by Representative Rachel Talbot Ross, also Assistant Majority Leader. We're so thrilled with that. She's just incredible. And that isn't quite out of the revisor's office yet, so we don't have an LD number yet or a public hearing date, but I can certainly keep everybody informed about all of that as it comes up. And I think, you know, thinking about the large sovereignty bill, it is a large bill. It covers many areas, but it can be simplified by really, it stresses that the Maine tribes should be an equal footing and status with all of the other federally recognized tribes in the country. And that, you know, these laws, it, you know, should they pass, would have to be adopted by our tribal communities. There is a process for amending the Settlement Act. And really, it's not about taking anything from the rest of Maine. It's about getting Maine tribes to where they should be under federal law. And I think, you know, change is often uncomfortable, and some of these things have been difficult to talk about with lawmakers, but I think if we can truly create some lasting and meaningful amendments to this act, there will be some new clarity around the roles of everybody involved in government, and that will lead to hopefully a lot of healing and peace. Because I think what I've seen just in the time I've been in tribal leadership is a lot of times there's distrust because, you know, people don't know. You know, that's what it boils down to. People don't know who has jurisdiction over what. Everybody's kind of living in this fear and suspicion. And I think if we can clean up things in this Settlement Act, it will go really far in tribal-state relations. And I have kind of, you know, I have my time as a tribal leader, but as a teenager, my father, Barry Dana, was chief of the tribe. So I remember him in a court case with the paper mills in Maine. They were trying to access our internal tribal documents. So our council meeting minutes, our Department of Natural Resources information. And, you know, one could logically assume it was so that they could, you know, discharge more into the Penobscot River, which is part of our ancestral homeland. Penobscot people at that time were suffering because of how dirty the river was, you know, very high cancer rates. The fish were basically poisoned. As a child, I wasn't allowed to swim in the river. So we, you know, thinking about where Indian Island is, we are south of three very large paper mills. You know, only one is operating currently, but there was a lot of tension back then with these large paper mills and the tribe. So I remember sitting in the court in Portland, the district court, and this case had come there. And I just thought I was kind of going to see my father at work for the day and that I might get to see, you know, some boring court things play out. And they actually ruled in favor of the paper mills and arrested my dad and the Passamaquoddy chiefs for not turning over these documents to the paper companies. And they arrested them, but they said, you all will report for jail Monday morning unless you turn over these documents. And every day you're in jail, each tribal community will be fined $1,000. So I remember I was a teenager that I wasn't able to vote, but we had a big tri-council meeting and there was a lot of debate. So this was a tri-council, it was a Penobscot Nation, and then the Passamaquoddy have two separate communities, Madoc-Magook at Indian Township and Sabaic at Pleasant Point. So that the two chiefs from the Passamaquoddy tribe were also sentenced to jail. And at the end of this very long council meeting, it was decided to turn over the documents. The communities didn't want to be without the chiefs. Nobody had the resources to pay those kinds of fines. And, you know, it was a sad day, I think. So the way that the tribes turned the documents over was a protest march for sovereignty. And it started in Norridgewock, Maine, which is the site of a massacre of our ancestors in the 1700s. There had been a French priest named Father Rawl, who was living there on the banks of the Kennebec. And the British showed up in the middle of the night. They were looking for that priest. They essentially, you know, massacred everyone they saw. They did take the priest and kill him as well. And the people who survived swam across the Kennebec and later came into Penobscot and Passamaquoddy territory and settled with those people. So I've been there many times, and it's a powerful place, being right at the massacre site on the edge of the Kennebec River. So the march started there and ended in Augusta. And as a teenager, being around all of this, there's drumming and people are carrying signs and chanting about sovereignty. And it was called a sovereignty march. But I remember thinking, this doesn't feel very sovereign to have to turn these things in and to have to kind of, you know, concede this way. So I also formed a lot of my thinking about sovereignty around this notion that it's something sacred that you're protecting. So even though we had kind of lost, there was still the spirit of self-determination. And it was, you know, carried that day for sure, even though it was technically a loss for the tribes. So I think back to all of that, and it's really come full circle for me now that I'm able to interact with my colleagues in the legislature and present testimony on these things. And I feel like I have a good sense of what sovereignty should look like, and I'm really hopeful that we will get there in Maine. And I think if anybody has any questions so far, I could certainly take them, or I could keep going.
I have a few questions. They are mostly about the legislation. Mm-hmm. Specifically, if you want me to read those now, or if you want to continue speaking about any particular aspect of the legislation, that's fine too.
Yeah, I think we can start taking questions, and then I can, you know, as I get going, I'll probably tell more stories and
okay, have to good. Bring me back. Good, because thank you, because that I find that. It's so interesting. It's really important to put the legislation in context of history and experience of the relationships and in Maine. So I'll go with a few questions that we got. Several people asked about how they can help support the bills that you've mentioned. What actions do you recommend that we can do to help support you and the legislation?
That's a great question. And as we get going into the public hearing process and work session process, WabanakiAlliance.com is going to have kind of weekly to-do lists around this. So you can go there and sign up for our email list if you haven't yet. That'll be the most kind of up-to-date, like action item of the week. And I think a big part of helping this be successful is going to be talking to your representatives and senators and, you know, yeah, thank you. And writing letters to the editor and really educating your neighbors and friends about tribal sovereignty being a good thing. I think sometimes there's a lot of fear built up around the unknown. We had the gaming hearing yesterday and, you know, it's truly, whatever your feelings about gambling are, you know, from an ethical or moral or religious place, it's not about gaming for us. It's about sovereignty. It's about having the right to decide for ourselves what kind of economic development we're going to engage in. And some of the testimony was from people in Oxford that have been relying on their casino for a lot of employment and economic development for that area. And they were telling the committee, you know, first of all, there's no specific plan in place to start a casino, any casino. There's no plans for all the tribes to do it together. There's no individual plans. At this point, it's just seeking this parity around gaming with other tribes in the country. So the testimony from the folks in Oxford was saying, you know, the main economy can't support five more casinos because there's five tribal communities. So it's jumping from this place of, we haven't even talked about it yet, to, oh no, there's gonna be a casino on every corner. And I think that the fix to that is just really clear communication about what sovereignty is and what it isn't. You know, it isn't going to be the tribes buying up every piece of land in Maine and putting casinos on it, or you know, kicking hunters off land, or you know, or a lot of, you know, there's a lot of fear around this. I was in another situation and a person was talking about this bill and they said, well, if this passes, you know, the tribes will have hunting on Sundays and we can't have that. It'll be chaotic. And actually Penobscot Nation, and I believe Passamaquoddy at least, has had hunting on Sundays since forever. And it hasn't ever been enough of an issue to be chaotic or negative. So it's little things like that. And I think I've seen the power that can happen when allies get engaged around these issues, because I think sometimes people have the impression that it's tribes constantly asking for special rights when it's really just tribes asking for either a restoration of rights or for just things that we have already to be properly recognized and respected. And I think if our allies and friends around the state can push this message of equality and not anything special or taking away from anybody else, I think that'll be where some of the magic can happen. And also when we talk about racial equity, I think, you know, there's this big push right now for, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're seeing those everywhere. And when you can target and support the most vulnerable groups in your state or society, it really benefits the whole. So bringing it back to gaming again, if tribes did operate casinos, all of that revenue has to go into tribal communities and the state, you know, from the Indian Regulatory Gaming Act. So, you know, those funds would stay in Maine, they would uplift surrounding communities, many tribal lands are in very rural places. So, you know, it's, I think a lot of communication about the positives of this will break down a lot of that fear.
Okay, good. This is sort of related, but are there any other ways apart from lobbying the legislature that we as non-Indigenous, non-tribal citizens can help support the work you're doing?
Yeah, I think it would be, you know, a lot of the things I just mentioned, and I did a lot of work around removing Indian mascots in schools, and I started this when I was a teenager. I would go around to schools and sit on panels and talk to my peers, and as I got older, and saw, you know, some of the schools that really hung on to these, what finally really moved the needle was engaging people in those communities to speak up on our behalf. And that mixture of, you know, elevating Indigenous voices and also kind of, you know, amplifying the how you feel about tribal sovereignty and why you think it's fair or right, that really goes a long way. So as far as specifics, I think, you know, we can get into the mechanics of lobbying and writing letters and testifying and all of that. But I think on a broader stage in Maine society right now, we can be talking a whole lot about tribal sovereignty and self-government and determination and self-determination. And like I talked about, breaking down a lot of that fear. And, you know, I feel like there's always some people we may not quite reach. There's always some people that, you know, aren't going to open those hearts and minds. So also being aware of that, but speaking to the broader community, you will get a lot of people to come around that you initially may have written off. And I think that happens through shared humanity. I'm really big on that. You know, humans, we're all pretty much driven by the same four or five emotions and feelings and needs. So when you can connect to people around that, talking about violence against women, when we're able to tell stories of survivors that weren't getting justice in court systems because of these jurisdictional mazes, that hits home for people a lot because they've loved somebody or they've known somebody that has been through a similar thing. So when you can really make it human, that goes a long way.
Great. Yeah. There are a couple other questions that came in that are sort of legislative strategy, if you will. One person asked where you see the opposition coming from on these bills. And another one is how is this being played as to how it affects non-tribal citizens and how to address those?
So the opposition we've seen is essentially some are saying that this bill is too large, it's trying to do too much, it's kind of a radical change to how we've been doing things. And honestly, there's some special interest groups, you know, around the outdoors and hunting and things that have been opposed to it. There's also some, you know, I don't know if much will come of it, but there's some towns around where we own land that are worried about the land into trust. And that's probably a good thing to speak about for a moment. So the types of tribal land are reservation, which is, you know, basically formed by the federal government for tribes. And that's where we have the most autonomy. That's where our communities are. There's trust land, which is held in trust by the government for tribes. So when we signed on to the Settlement Act, we were given funds to acquire lands that would hopefully be put into trust. Neither the Penobscot Nation nor the Passamaquoddy tribe has reached the full amount of acreage that we were allotted in that 1980 act. Again, I wasn't around back then, but there's stories of, you know, prices going way up when people knew that the tribes had money to spend on land, whole parcels being clear cut. So there's been some malice, I think, around land and, you know, talking about power in the United States is usually about land. You know, that's always been how we measure worth of an individual or a society is land holdings. So, you know, that's always been a sticky place. And then there's fee land. So the Penobscot Nation owns quite a bit of fee land in Carabasset Valley. And part of the discussions around this bill have been between us and the town of Carabasset Valley because they have expressed concern that we would put all of that fee land into trust. And then, you know, then we could have, you know, a casino on it if all of this passed. So, you know, breaking down those fears and that opposition has been, well, there's, you know, the land into trust process with the federal government is quite long. It involves negotiations with the town. It involves, you know, dealings with the state. So it would be, you know, and there's no plans to do that, you know, basically. And then there, yeah, so I went through all the types of land. So some of the opposition has been around, well, what are the tribes going to do with their land? And I think we've been kind of dispelling those fears as we've seen them. And then the second part of your question was, how are people saying these changes will affect non-Native people in Maine? So that's part of it. I think the opposition to the bill is saying, if the tribes have jurisdiction over all of their lands, you know, you won't be able to get permits on them. There was some more testimony in the last public hearing in the last session about, well, what if a hunter stumbles on to tribal land and shoots a moose, can they be persecuted? And that's actually happened. And it wasn't a big deal. They called in our wardens and the state wardens and everybody worked it out. So I think, and then it's important to understand also that a lot of the natural resources policies that we have in the tribes are basically the same as the state laws or better. So it's not like the tribes are ever going to harm the environment by having increased jurisdiction. And that's probably something that should go without saying. And that's another thing we stress a lot is that our ancestors have been stewards of these lands and waters since time immemorial. So there's really nothing to lose in an environmental sense by the tribes having increased jurisdiction. And, you know, that's, like I said, it should go without saying, but, you know, we don't plan on ever leaving our homelands. So we certainly want to take care of them.
Perfect sense. I have a question here that came in that was asking about the Treaty of Watertown of 1776. And I'm not sure if that's within the scope of the discussion or if you want to address that. But I wanted to present that from one of our attendees.
Sure. So I believe that has to do with the border. And certain rights and privileges about tribes crossing the border. And I am not an expert on that. And it's not specifically having to do with this legislation, but I know that there have been efforts recently around the border crossing. And you know, I know from the Jay Treaty that it's supposed to be, you know, your tribal ID is supposed to take you across the border. And that hasn't always happened. There's been issues with that. So that's probably about all I can touch on for that.
Okay, that's fine. And one other question about the legislation, the omnibus bill is, and I'm not sure this is a fair question, but it, you know, someone asked how optimistic you are about the chances of this passing. I'm kind of wondering if you could speak to how the support and opposition might break down along party lines if it does.
Sure. And I just looked up the Treaty of Watertown and I had the complete wrong treaty. So I could not have been more wrong about that. Yeah, it was Jay's treaty that has to do with the border. The Treaty of Watertown was actually the first treaty signed after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And it included the governments of the Massachusetts colony and the tribal nations. So I apologize for that. Not a historian. But yes, and I think that speaks to us being sovereign nations. I think that's the big point with the Treaty of Watertown. So I had this crisscrossed in my head. How I'm feeling about the success of the omnibus bill, I think there's resistance around embracing this big of a bill. And I think that the only way to get around a lot of that resistance is through clear communication and kind of constantly working this bill and asking the right questions and not being afraid to get uncomfortable around things. And that, you know, is working with the governor's office, the attorney general's office, the lawmakers on judiciary and all the lawmakers in both chambers. But I see we've had a couple meetings with the Judiciary Committee already, and it's gone pretty well. We have, I think there's 6 new members on the committee. So we're not working with a lot of the same people as last session, but Representative Tom Harnett was on the committee last session and is now the House Chair. And that's been wonderful because he has a pretty deep knowledge of the whole process. And Representative Rena Newell is now sitting on the Judiciary Committee. So I feel good about the committee work, and I'm hopeful that the fruits of that labor will go far when it comes to talking with the governor and you know the powers that be.
We have a few more minutes if anyone wants to put an additional question in the chat or use the raise hand function, and we can, and I will give you the opportunity to ask that question. My husband Andre Blanchard is here, and he's got a question.
Hi, and welcome, Ambassador Dana. I was wondering if there's any, if you've ever come across, or maybe you've written yourself, any histories of like the entire, way back to the beginning, in the state of Maine or in this Maine territory, what's happened between like the federal government and the state government of Maine once it was formed, and the tribes and nations that have occupied this land for since the dawn of time, basically.
He's looking for book recommendations.
Yeah, do you have anything, do you know of anything that's out there that could give me like some good background on, so how I could support you better in when I go and give testimony and things like that, so I know the whole picture?
Yeah, absolutely. The Abbey Museum has resources on their website. They would probably have all the best book recommendations, but also articles and kind of short things to read. And I'm thinking of a book, Unsettled,
okay,
by Neil Rode, I believe his name was. And that details the sovereignty march that I talked about and that court case. And it also gives quite a bit of history. That's a good one to read to understand, how we got here and all the different kind of inner workings of things.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I have a question whether your presentation is going to be recorded and available. Yes, it is recorded, and we will make that available. It will probably be, we'll probably post a link to it on our Facebook page, and that is Waldo County Democratic Committee on Facebook. You can find us that way, and we'd be happy to share that, or you can email info@waldocountydemocrats.com. Whoops, I just misspelled Democrats. That's probably going to get big points taken off for that, but I can't type and speak at the same time. All right, I think that is all the questions that we have. And I just want to take the chance now to thank you again, Ambassador Dana, for being generous with your time during this busy legislative season. I'm also grateful to everyone who's participated today. I want to let you know that our next community program is on Saturday, April 3rd at noon. It's going to be, the topic is solar energy in Waldo County, with guest speakers Jen and Hans Albee of Brooks, who work for Revision Energy. If you're interested, you can email us at info@waldocountydemocrats.com. That's in your Zoom message and that you got by email, and it's also in the chat and correctly spelled by my worthy assistants. So thank you again, Ambassador Dana. Have a great evening, everyone, and we'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.